what you believe and not what you see. We may be only human, there's another way to be. Don't need God to explain my morality. You can tell what's good and bad without resort to a deity. Made up stories to explain it.
Welcome to the NASA Quotes Podcast. This is Jake.
This is Nick.
Welcome to episode 22.
22. Keep on moving along. It's been a while. It's been, what?
For spring. It's been a while. It was December 28th, I think, is the last one that went out.
Yeah. I really had hoped to get one more out before I started classes in January, and it just didn't happen. You know, my wife was recovering from a surgery, so I had take care of
her.
Yeah, I want school started. So I'm on spring break this upcoming week, so I was able to take time this weekend to prepare. And I don't know, if we have time, maybe we'll squeeze one out next weekend, too. I'd have time to prepare more material for another podcast over the week. And it's too early to say, but if it...
Right, I'll have time, I'm sure I will, at some point, maybe.
Well, you'll be coming over on Saturday next week.
Well, that's right.
Maybe we can try to... record one then. That'd be cool. So yeah, listeners, if you're getting pissed off, maybe we'll try to get another one out real quick for you, and then it'll be a few months again probably. We need some catchy tagline when we start our podcast. You know, we've got our end, you know, sign off, you know, keep asking questions thing, but we need
I think we do.
Welcome to the Agnostic Brothers Podcast. The only podcast where a couple of barely educated guys from Illinois or talking about religion or something like that, but
I like it. It's descriptive.
It's brutally honest.
Yeah. Leaves no ambiguity at all.
Yes.
Exactly what you're listening to.
That's what we are.
What? I like it. Let's make that our new intro.
What was it again? The only podcast where a couple of barely educated guys from Central Illinois are talking about religion.
Yeah, that was it. I say we stick with it.
Okay. Sounds good.
So,
I think we have a spot the fallacy, which we haven't done one in a while. And most of you have probably heard this before. It's been going around a lot. Recently, Bill O'Reilly made the claim that we know there's a God because of the tides. And goes on to say, well, how do you explain the existence of the tides? They come in and out like clockwork without God.
Never a miscommunication.
Yes. So
tide goes in, tide goes out.
We know what happens with the tides, and that was, I guess, delivered to him, and here was his response.
David, Beverly Hills, Florida. What do you mean when you refer to the tides, when you ask about the existence of God? Science explains the tides, the moon's gravity pulls on the ocean. Okay, how'd the moon get there? How'd the moon get there? Look, you pinheads who attacked me for this, you guys are just desperate. How'd the moon get there? How'd the sun get there? How'd it get there? Can you explain that to me? How come we have that and Mars doesn't have it? Venus doesn't have it. How come? Why not? How'd it get here? How did that little amoeba get here? Crawl out there. How'd it do it? Come on. You have order in this universe. You have an order in the universe. Tide comes in, tide goes out. Okay, yeah, the moon does it. Fine. How'd the moon get there? Who put it there? Did it just happen? Okay, if we have existence, if we have life on Earth, how come they don't have it on the other planets? Were we just lucky? Some meteor would do this? Come on. You know, I see this stuff, it's desperate. As I've said many times, it takes more faith to not believe and to think that this was all luck, that all this human body, the intricacies of it and everything else, all luck, than it does to believe in a deity.
So, there you go.
How'd the moon get there?
How'd it get there?
Pinheads?
Yeah, pinheads. How'd it get there? So,
right.
The fallacy here, apart from his gross ignorance of science, is moving the goalposts.
Well, it's moving the goalposts, and it's got the gaps, saying you can't explain it, therefore God did it.
Yeah. And we've actually done moving the goalposts before. I just couldn't help but make fun of them for this.
Everyone made fun of this when it happened.
And we're just jumping on the bandwagon.
Right. We're just a couple weeks late, that's all.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't...
That's okay. Did you see the Mr. Deity?
Yeah! Yeah, they he made fun of it there, too.
Like, well, we need to step in. You know, never miscommunication, you know?
Yeah.
Larry's like, sir, if you stepped in and made a miscommunication, that would be evidence of yours.
Yeah.
If you stop the sun or stop the tide.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So and then, of course, is that age-old, you know, well, it takes more faith not to believe than it does to believe, which doesn't make any sense at all. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, yeah, I'm thinking sixth grade was when I was able to explain that the tides were caused by the moon. About that time frame.
At the latest.
Sixth grade science class, 11 years old. I understand, you know. And a lot of people, you know, if you don't use science or think about science on a regular basis, the stuff you learn in grade school and in high school, you're going to lose. A lot of people don't remember, like, high school chemistry or high school physics, but this is really basic stuff. So, that ignorance is scary.
Yeah, I know.
And then I love it. He's, well, you guys are just desperate. You're desperate. No, desperate would be thinking and trying to come up with something to debunk what he's saying. It's not desperate when you can immediately explain why he's wrong.
I mean, eventually, you're going to get to the point where we don't know what, you know, the moon. I think the top theory we have now is a planetoid and the Earth struck each other and the moon was an offshoot or something like that. You know, that's where the moon came from.
That sounds familiar.
I think that's the ranking theory. And eventually, we're going to get to a point where we don't know what happened, but it doesn't automatically mean God did it.
Yeah, once he moves the goalposts far enough, then yeah, he may get to, you know, well, I don't know. But then again, that's just the argument from ignorance.
Yeah.
So. Oh, well. Bill O'Reilly's a douchebag.
Oh, also, I wanted to mention this really quick. I just thought of this. I have recently been, you know, reading up on different arguments for the existence of God, and I was listening to the TAG argument, or reading up on that, the transcendental argument for the existence of God. I talked about this with you a while ago.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, and I don't find it convincing, but it's really hard. I don't think I could explain it on here. Maybe I'll work that up, maybe. And we can talk about that.
Work on it this week, and we'll record next week.
Yeah, it has to do with logic. You know, our logic exists, therefore God exists. It's kind of... See, from what I understand of it, I'll just try to give you a really quick dumbed-down version of it. You know, logic is a concept that exists in the mind, right? Or, you know, logical absolutes.
Yeah.
You know, like we hold concepts in our mind, like A equals A. Well, A will equal A whether or not the human mind is there, which means those logical concepts must be being held in a mind somewhere.
Oh, so yeah.
To be the mind of God. I might be getting that wrong. It's very probable that I am. That's just my dummy way of understanding it from what I read. But I think I might look into that and see if I can bring up a bit more. I mean, I could talk about it a little better for the show. But that's all I had.
Okay, well, a preview, hopefully.
Preview, yeah, maybe.
More upcoming material. Now, I guess I can shoot this out right now. We usually, at the end of the podcast, we'll talk about how to get a hold of us. One of the ways is on our Facebook group. If you go to Facebook and type Agnostic Brothers Podcast, we'll come up. We have a group. It's not a very active group. There's not a whole lot of people in there because we're just not that good. But we do have postings. We put updates and we're going to record when episodes are posted and whatnot. A guy named Mike Lee has been posting videos on our page. He's been making some YouTube videos, which are actually pretty funny. So just want to give a shout out to Mike. Thanks for the videos. Listeners, if you get a chance, head over to our Facebook page and take a look at Mike's videos. And I'll probably put a link to his YouTube page on our website as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his YouTube page is called Religious Antagonist. That's his YouTube. religious antagonist.
Love it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's in the latest video, he basically goes into a library and starts moving all the Bibles from, like, the history section to the fiction section.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's funny because he's like, we need a cart. And he goes up to somebody at the library who works there and says, yeah, some of your books are put in the wrong place. Can I have a cart? Can you give me a cart? And the person, without asking, like, who are you and what's wrong and why are you moving stuff, says, okay, and goes and gets him a cart. And he just piles on all their Bibles. And there was a lot of them there, too. And
oh, yeah. Moves them. That reminds me of a while ago, some guy did this. He was going to bookstores and moving the creationism books out of the science section into the religion section.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I forget who that was. I heard about him. Yeah. I think it was on another podcast, the Geologic podcast, maybe. I don't remember, but it was funny.
Yeah. Ah, no kidding. But that's another battle to fight. So, well, I guess, you know, we're not very good at segues. Nope. I'm just going to jump right into the meat of the podcast.
You know what? You need to get that Super Friends thing, you know, that wow, or the...
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice. Yeah. We need music. Little, you know, ditties or whatnot.
How about the Austin Powers thing? You know, where he dances in between the scenes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get that kind
of... You should definitely add one of those in.
60s music. 60s, you know, psychedelic type music. I think on a very early episode, we mentioned, I don't know, we talked about the Shawshank Redemption, and then your segue was speaking of anal rape or something like that, and we went right into something else, and we need more stuff like that.
Right. So,
but on our episode today, we will talk about the second law of thermodynamics. So, the second law of thermodynamics has been argued for a couple things. One is to disprove evolution, and one is to prove the existence of God by showing that a miracle has occurred at some point in time in the universe's history. These arguments have been debunked by different sources, and I guess I haven't been completely satisfied with all the explanations I've heard from people debunking it.
Yeah, because I remember I pointed you to X and Dodo's videos on YouTube about this, and you weren't very satisfied.
I wasn't with that. I didn't necessarily agree with his classification of entropy. And it's important to understand at least the very basics of it, because this comes up a lot. I was... Jake and I are both members of the Pure Human Society, and neither one of us go to meetings very often just because time doesn't necessarily work out. The location isn't good for Jake usually of the meetings, and the time isn't very good for me because I'm so busy. But the last meeting I went to probably about 6 months ago, one of the members had brought up the second law of thermodynamics and how he was kind of debating over religion with a friend, and this was brought up, and he didn't have an answer to it because he'd never heard it before. And it's, if you at least understand the basics of the second law, it's pretty easy to see how neither argument holds up. And I tried to explain it, and everyone at the table looked at me like I was completely nuts. Like, I could tell, I don't think I explained it very well. I wasn't prepared to do it, and it's kind of a complicated, complicated concept to somebody who doesn't really know much about physics or chemistry. So I'm going to try to give a little bit of more broad definition. So like I said, again, it's used in two different arguments. One is to disprove evolution, which is what you hear the most of. And another one is to prove a miracle had occurred. And I'll go through both arguments because they actually contradict each other, ironically enough. So I'll start off by doing a brief just kind of statement of the second law of thermodynamics. It states, the entropy of a closed system is constantly increasing. It's also been stated the entropy of the universe is constantly increasing, and that's because the universe is the only closed system we're aware exists. At this time, I'm going to describe entropy as being disorder. I'll go into more detail as to what that means later. And I guess that's really been the thing. I've always heard it described as disorder. There's been some talk of stating that maybe disorder isn't the best way to describe entropy. I'll explain later why I'm going to describe it as disorder. But I'm giving a limited explanation of the second law at this time for a reason. And that's because you don't necessarily need to know a lot about entropy to, I guess, debunk the evolution argument from it. So let's go over that argument real quick. Number one. In order for evolution to happen, entropy must decrease, or order must increase. Disorder decreases. Evolution violates the second law of thermodynamics. Therefore, evolution did not happen. So number two is evolution violates the second law of thermodynamics. Number three, evolution did not happen. Okay, so it fails on statement number two, with evolution violating the second law of thermodynamics, which other people have already pointed this out, and that's usually where people go to debunk it, but it's kind of complicated to do so. And I will eventually get to that, but I want to point out that there's a hidden premise in this argument that's not mentioned by religious people when they use the argument, but it fails on that premise too, which is probably why they don't mention it. So this premise must exist to go from 2 to 3, from evolution violating the second law of thermodynamics to evolution did not happen. You have to have a premise that states scientific laws cannot be violated for any reason whatsoever. Right? Because you're saying evolution violates a scientific law, therefore it did not happen. That's a really odd premise for somebody who believes that a talking snake convinced a woman to eat an apple,
right,
and now people die because of it.
Or that the universe is poofed into existence magically.
Yeah.
How's that law of conservation of matter doing for you?
Yeah, exactly. And really, if they want to accept this premise, fine, but you have to hold them to it. You know, if that's the case, then Jesus did not turn water into wine. There was no resurrection. He did not resurrect anybody from the dead, including himself. There was no virgin birth. There was no miraculous healings. You can discount every miracle in the Bible by this premise.
Did he suspend the laws of buoyancy to walk on water?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Go on and on and on and on. Now, the argument, of course, isn't necessary for religion. It's opposing evolution. But most people who are making this argument are doing so for religious reasons. They want...
Yeah, nobody's disproving evolution for the scientific... I mean, I'll give a caveat. I'm sure some people are trying to disprove evolution for the scientific merit, you know, because that's what science constantly does. But, I mean, no one's seriously trying to disprove evolution for non-religious reasons.
Yeah. And there are debates within the scientific community about evolution, like how it happened, more details about evolution, but there's not really much dispute over whether or not evolution actually occurred. Most people are making this argument because they want to show that evolution didn't happen because their God created humanity in its current state. But if they want to use this argument, they have to hold to that premise. So it basically goes like this. Even if evolution did defy the second law, God could have used a miracle to defy the second law. You can throw that right in a religious person's face. Okay, well, how come God didn't, you know, if you believe God used miracles to do other things, why didn't God miracle evolution into existence? The retort would be to appeal on the authority of the Bible, which is to state that the Bible clearly states that evolution did not occur, that man was created in its current state. And then the response to that would be, well, what about the other inaccuracies in the Bible? 7 days of creation, the earth having light before the sun was created, the earth sitting on pillars, pi being exactly three.
So they're using science to try to disprove evolution while ignoring science altogether in any other respect.
Yeah. It's exactly. Right. They're doing to science what they do with the Bible. They're just picking the parts they like and ignoring everything else.
You can't explain that.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, pinheads. and I actually had debating on a completely different topic on Facebook, bringing up scientific inaccuracies of the Bible. Somebody said, "Well, the Bible wasn't meant to be a science manual, but rather a moral document." It's a Fine. It's a different topic of a different argument altogether. I don't agree with that statement, but if that's their case, then they can't say, you know, argue against evolution because of the Bible.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Bible isn't it was never meant to be a science book, and you know most Christians out there understand that they don't. It's just the younger creationists who have to be dicks about it.
Yeah. Dicks. Okay. So, if you look at this hidden premise from a scientific view, taking religion out of the picture, it doesn't hold. It still fails. Science is not dogmatic in nature. So it's not unusual for two scientific theories to collide with each other. Now, a good scientific theory has two components. It explains something, and it makes a prediction. So, for two theories to contradict each other, they have to make different predictions over the same occurrence. So, A happens, theory 1 says B will happen afterwards, theory 2 says C will happen afterwards. So, the scientific method would say, let's set up experiments designed to disprove one or the other theories. Don't just accept the one that happens to have been around longer, that happens to be more well-established. If a new theory contradicts an old theory, well, science is made. If they're both good theories, then you can disprove one of them.
Or at least show one to be more likely.
Yeah, exactly. In religious people...
You don't automatically say, you know, you try to explain gravity, well, you know, we don't have a graviton yet. You know, that doesn't mean that magical fairies do it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And, you know, religious people will claim sometimes that science is just as dogmatic as religion, and people don't really do this, that people just accept scientific claims dogmatically the same way they accept their religion. Oh, well, you science people are just, you know, you worship your science the way we worship our God. You're just not calling it that. And you'll explain what I just explained about how, you know, if there's something that contradicts established science, well, the scientific method will rule one out.
Science changes.
And we can demonstrate that that's happened already. The theory of relativity contradicts Newton's law of gravity.
Yeah.
And many people were very slow to accept it. But both of them made... I guess, contradictory predictions in a certain situation. That being, relativity predicted that light will bend when passing the sun due to the sun's gravity, where Newtonian gravity predicted that it would not. Now, it was a tricky case because we can't see light from stars when it passes by the sun because the sun blocks out that light. We can only see stars when we're on the other side of the sun coming from the opposite direction and we're facing away from the sun. So the sun doesn't have a chance to do that. The only way to test this theory was to measure positions of stars that can be seen during a solar eclipse. So it was a very difficult experiment to do because solar eclipses are rare, for one thing. It involved a lot of traveling. Okay, there's going to be a solar eclipse in Australia in 2 years. So in 2 years, we're going to go and try this. At the time, the equipment did not exist to make the measurements that were required. And it took, God, somewhere between 10 and 20 years, I think, to finally make a good experiment, to make good measurements of positions of stars during a solar eclipse, and show that the light actually did bend. That, in other words, the apparent position of the stars from our vantage point was different than we would expect if the light was not bending. And there's the saying that most people attribute to Carl Sagan, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And this was an extraordinary claim. But eventually we had our extraordinary evidence, and today we do accept general relativity. Even though it defies the law of gravity, they both made predictions. Scientific method ruled one out. We did not just dogmatically hold on to Newton's gravity, but we accepted relativity when we had the evidence.
Right. Didn't relativity explain something about Mercury's rotation around the sun?
Yes. I do believe that since then, you know, because as technology has improved, we've gotten much better at observing planets' rotations and whatnot. And yeah, Mercury's rotation, I'm pretty sure it was Mercury, rotating around the Sun, relativity made a slightly different prediction than gravity does about Mercury's rotation.
Well, yeah, because the Newtonian mechanics, it was something was wrong, like, right, because Mercury was acting, you know, weird. I'm not sure exactly how the science was, but I know, you know, Mercury wasn't acting like it should be, so we were all thinking, what the hell's wrong with our science, but it turned out...
And then, just the, you know. Yeah, relativity just explained it. And also, GPS systems today use relativity.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
Work, yeah.
Because the satellites are so high up and they're going so much faster.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know a whole lot about the specifics of how like GPS is working.
It's the faster you're going, the faster time goes, or slower time goes for you, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So
if one person's moving relative to another person, time will go slower for them.
Right.
Yeah, I always think of that movie Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah.
Where the kid's abducted by an alien and comes back 8 years later, and he hasn't aged at all, where everyone's 8 years older, and they're saying he was traveling near the speed of light, which is why that happened.
Yeah.
This is a cool movie.
I love it.
So, basically, with regards to, I guess, scientific method, we have every reason to believe that the universe operates on scientific laws. But we have no reason at all to believe that we completely understand all of these laws. So there's a lot out there that we don't know, that we don't understand about how the universe works. And scientists are learning more and more as time progresses. But the only way we can do that and continue to learn about our universe is to let go of our dogmatic claims and be willing to accept new knowledge. So
and that's why science works so well, because it doesn't take anything set in stone.
So...
essentially, I mean...
rule of thumb, basically, that I was trying to get at is you can't discount any observation just because it conflicts with what we know or expect about science.
I mean, yeah, scientists are constantly trying to prove other scientists wrong, because that's where the money is in science.
Yeah.
Not the money, but that's where the notoriety is.
Exactly.
You know, you prove someone wrong. Like, holy crap, this guy just showed that, you know, Newton or Einstein was wrong about something.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Everyone wants to be the next Einstein. They want to prove that a very long-held belief was wrong.
Scientists, for the most part, they're happy with this. They're happy when someone proves them wrong, because that leads to more discovery. So... the opposite of dogma, the very opposite
yes.
of what dogma is.
Skepticism at its finest. Okay, so even if... I'm going to go into entropy and the second law, and even if you're listening to this and you don't get that, you can still retort the argument about evolution just by pointing out that they are holding on to a scientific law way too much. Especially when they're willing to discount scientific laws in other situations. So, with that being said, on to entropy and the second law of thermodynamics. Now, I've heard different sources explain that disorder isn't the best analogy for entropy. And Irreligiosity talked about this a little bit, and they basically said that there was an article out there, I haven't had a chance to look it up yet, that kind of said that disorder isn't a good analogy for entropy. And the excellent Dodo, he flat out said that entropy was not disorder, which I don't necessarily agree with that. I guess I would need to read how entropy was explained to not be disorder. I'm going to call entropy disorder because that was how it was explained to me in my college chemistry and physics courses. And on top of that, Stephen Hawking, in his book A Brief History of Time, describes entropy as being disorder. So that's the authority I'm pushing this on. Now, I know Dr. Hawking has written books since this one, so maybe he's changed his definition of entropy. And if anybody is familiar with some of his more recent books and can contradict me or say, no, he's not calling it that anymore, I'd love to hear that. But... and I do plan to read more of his work eventually when time permits. But for now, I'm going to call entropy disorder. Okay, now here's one thing that I guess may cause a problem. a lot of teachers will, when first introducing entropy, they will kind of describe a messy bedroom as having entropy. So after you leave your bedroom alone and don't clean it up, after a while it gets messier and messier and messier. In other words, it gets more disorderly. So the second law states that disorder will constantly increase. And that's because it's like a lot of thermodynamics. So I'm getting off my top or off my notes here. Now I don't like.
That's okay.
I don't like that analogy too much. It's a good analogy to demonstrate how things become disorderly over time. But a teenager's room doesn't become messy because of entropy. It becomes messy because teenagers tend to be slobs. And that may be why it's a bad analogy. So I'm going to explain it a little bit differently. This explanation comes from a physics textbook called University Physics by Richard Wolfson. Basically, one way to distinguish order from disorder is that there are more ways for disorder to exist than order. So let's say I have a deck of cards. I buy a new deck of cards. So when I buy this deck of cards, the cards are organized in numerical order and by suit. You would call the card unshuffled. So most people, when they're playing cards, you want a deck to be completely random. In other words, you want it to be disorderly. So you shuffle the deck. So we could call the brand new deck of cards that's completely ordered to be unshuffled. And then we shuffle the cards, and we will call the deck shuffled. Well, there are thousands of random patterns of cards that could exist. There's thousands of ways for a card deck to be shuffled, or deck of cards to be shuffled, but only really a few ways for it to be unshuffled, because there's only a few ways to organize it. So there's thousands of ways for a deck to be considered disorderly, but a small, just a few number of ways where it can be considered disorderly, because there's a couple ways you could organize your cards. Now this concept of order is generally applied to both matter and energy. So let's say I have two sealed containers, we'll call them jars. They're connected to each other by a tube. There's a valve on this tube, so I got my two jars, one tube. Both of them are completely closed to the outside of the jars, but they're connected by a tube that's with a shut valve. Now, one of these tubes is full of air, the other one has a vacuum in it. So when I open that valve, what do we expect is going to happen? The gas is going to go from one container to another until both of them have an equal amount of gas. Well, the original state with all the gas in one jar or one container is more orderly than with gas in both of them, because there's only really one way for the gas to exist in the one container, not the other. But there's lots of different ways where you can have gas in both containers. Because you could have, like, certain molecules in one container or certain molecules in another container, and you can switch those molecules around and have them switch containers, and now you have multiple ways for us to still have equal amounts of gas in both containers, but there's fewer ways for all of the gas to exist in one container. Is that making sense at all?
Yeah.
Okay, because I explain this stuff, and I'm hoping
it's
making sense. And that's another, like, that's the analogy I think that was given to me in chemistry class when entropy was first described. And I remember our chemistry professor was talking about this. He described it, got some weird questions because some people were having trouble picking it up, and he had to actually go back the next day and describe it again. And I think one student was asking, like, really bizarre questions about it, and then he wasn't in class the next day, so he's like, okay, well, now that so-and-so's gone, I'm going to explain it again. So he doesn't keep distracting me, which was kind of funny. So entropy is also applied to energy. So let's say I have a glass of water that's at the boiling temperature. It's boiling water. And I put ice cubes in it. Well, we expect for the ice cubes to melt. Now, boiling water contains more thermal energy than ice. So a heat transfer will occur until the ice is melted, and all the energy is uniformly distributed between all of the water. The ice will melt, it will become water. We'll have a full glass of water that's, you know, like lukewarm water. It's not boiling hot, but it's not freezing cold. That is an increase in entropy. or an increase in disorder. It's more orderly to have some of your water being frozen and some of your water to be boiling. So basically all the energy is in one portion, or a larger amount of energy is in one portion of the glass as opposed to another portion. When the energy becomes uniformly distributed throughout all of the water, that's when we have the highest amount or a higher amount of disorder.
Okay.
Now, here's another note about energy, and this concept is crucial to understanding applications of the second law and why we use it. Thermal energy is less organized than mechanical work. That is just, it's has everything to do with the second law of thermodynamics. So I can have like so many joules of energy stored in boiling water. Because you increase the temperature, sure. You add energy to the water, energy is measured in joules. It also takes so many joules of energy for me to, say, push a block across a floor. The reason why the mechanical work is more organized is because all of the force is going in one direction. So I have boiling water. I may add a certain, like, say, 20 joules of energy into water to make the water boil, where, well, we know that energy is stored in matter by way of temperature by increasing the speed of the molecules. You got molecules bouncing around. Well, they start bouncing around faster. That's heat. That's temperature. That's energy.
Well, they're bouncing all over the place.
Exactly. They're bouncing in any which way direction. There's no organization to it, just popping everywhere. A block, when you're pushing it, you're doing mechanical work. I can do 20 joules of mechanical work, and it's all going in the same direction.
Right.
Again, that is crucial to understanding the second law of thermodynamics and essentially why we can see order without the second law being violated. And again, it's a tricky concept, especially if you don't really know a whole lot about science. So some of you listeners may have turned this off already and said, screw this, Nick's talking about some crazy shit, so let's listen to a better podcast. And I don't blame you for that, but
no, yeah.
but for those of you who are still around, it's going to get good if you're a nerd like me and like this stuff.
Yeah, I think I see where you're going.
Okay. So let's go back to the second law of thermodynamics. It's a simple concept, but the applications become more complicated when we start talking about how we see order and disorder and stuff. So again, the law is the entropy of a closed system, or the universe, which is the only closed system we're aware of, is constantly increasing. Also make a note here that the Earth is not a closed system. It's not even a good model of a closed system because we have a lot of energy constantly pouring in from the sun. And that's also crucial to understanding why order on Earth is not a violation of the second law. Also, I'm going to say the first law of thermodynamics too, which this one's more well-known and easier to understand, I think. First law basically states that energy cannot be created or destroyed. We have a lot of reactions. We have our chemical reactions, physical reactions. We have energy floating around. Anytime you use energy, you're not really using it. You're converting it. We talk about consuming energy a lot, especially when you talk about, you know, burning fossil fuels and about how much energy the United States consumes. You don't really consume energy. You just convert it to another form of energy. So when we do mechanical work, we're not actually consuming energy. We're converting it to something else. In most cases, we are converting it to heat, to temperature, thermal energy. So let's say I'm doing mechanical work. I do 20 joules of work pushing a block across the floor. Well, when I am doing that, I am working against friction, because there's friction when the block slides across the floor. If I do 20 joules of work, we're going to find 20 joules of added heat when the floor and the block warm up because of the friction. As anyone knows, you rub your hands together to warm them up. Anything you do when you're working against friction is going to cause the objects to both warm up that are rubbing against each other. That is how the first law of thermodynamics is satisfied. Okay, so we're consuming energy. We're using energy to push a block across the floor. Well, friction is going to make sure that that 20 joules of energy is not lost. It's just converted to heat. Now, again, heat is less orderly than work. Or I should put it better, thermal energy is less orderly than mechanical work. Burning fuel also increases entropy. Stored energy is more organized than thermal energy. So we have a tank of gas, and actually, we'll talk about it this way. We have a family cemetery. It's kind of the family burial plot. And every spring, we'll have to go and clean stuff up. We'll get trees that fall down. Well, one winter, we had some pretty nasty storms, and a couple of big trees fell down. So we had a lot of our family members were over there, and we're pulling branches, cutting this big tree apart, and trying to burn it. Well, the tree wasn't quite dried out yet.
Yeah,
so
I remember
the wood was still wet, so we're sitting there, and people were mowing lawns, and people were doing this, doing that. Well, Jake and I are sitting there trying to get these damn trees to burn, which involved pouring gasoline on the fire, which was fun. I think I about burned my face off at one point in time, but it was still fun. So we've got this, I think we took like a soda can and cut it in half so it was an open container. We put this gas in it. Well, there's a lot of stored energy in the gasoline. So we throw this gasoline on the fire and poofs up, a lot of flames. We have both light and heat being released as energy. Well, this heat, thermal energy, and the light is less organized than the energy that's basically stored in molecular bonds inside gasoline. So by doing that, we may have had, say, 1,000 joules of energy stored in that little bit of gasoline. We throw the gasoline on there. First law of thermodynamics states, well, we can't lose that energy. It's converted. We got 1,000 joules of heat and light coming out, and we just converted energy from one form to another. So whenever you start your car, you are converting energy from... you're converting some of the energy to mechanical work because you're driving your car, the energy that's released by burning fuel, and a lot of it goes to heat, which increases entropy. Now, back to order. We can organize our world, okay? We can make order, increase order. But in order to do that, we need to do mechanical work. So let's go back to the explanation of our two containers. They have gas in them, right? So I open the valve. The gas goes from one container to another. We now, instead of having a vacuum in one and another container full of all the gas, we have two containers, each with an equal amount of gas. Now, I can get all of the gas back into one container, which would increase order and decrease entropy of that gas with, say, some kind of a pump. Right? So I hook some sort of pump up to it. I turn it on. The pump, say I've got a fan in there that rotates. It pumps the energy, or I'm sorry, the air, back into one container until eventually I have a vacuum in my second container and all the gas is in the first container. Now, in order to operate that pump, I have to put energy into it. So I organized that air again. I made it more orderly, but I had to use energy to do so. And in using the energy, you could kind of say I consumed it, but I just converted it to another energy, or another form of energy that had more entropy. Now, the second law of thermodynamics states that while I created order by decreasing entropy, by moving all the gas back to the first container, I increased entropy by running that pump and converting energy into thermal energy, converting probably electricity into heat, thermal energy. The second law of thermodynamics states that the increase in entropy by running that pump is greater than the decrease in entropy by organizing the molecules, the gas molecules.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So anytime you create order within a closed system, you will create disorder by a larger amount elsewhere in the system. The second law does not claim that we will never see increases of order inside of a system. So you cannot look at an increase in order and say it defies the second law of thermodynamics. All it states is that elsewhere in their system there must have been a larger increase in disorder to get that increase in order.
Okay.
Decrease in disorder would probably be better by stating it, actually, when I get to my next argument. Now, Exalt Dodo, in his... he was actually debunking something Kent Hovind was saying.
Yeah, and he was debunking Kent Hovind's second law of thermodynamics.
Yeah, yeah. And he said that that entropy, or the second law of thermodynamics, has nothing to do with order, but rather the availability of heat inside engines, or availability of energy inside heat engines. I disagreed with him when it comes to entropy not being disordered, but I did agree with him with the availability of heat, energy and heat engines, right? And this is just kind of a note of interest in case it comes up, if anyone's actually really, you know, some people might be listening to this and be bored, some people might say, hey, I like this stuff, if you're a nerdy like me. So, the second law of thermodynamics comes up in heat engines a lot, because basically you are converting, let's say I have an engine in a car. I'm burning gasoline. I'm burning fuel. I'm converting it to a less orderly form of energy, but then I'm using this thermal energy to get mechanical work out of it. Now, the second law of thermodynamics states that because of this thermal energy being less organized than mechanical work, you cannot get 100% efficiency out of that engine. So if I burn 100 joules, or I get 100 joules of thermal energy by burning fuel, I'm not going to get 100 joules of work out of that, because some of that energy is going to be lost to organizing the rest of the energy, to getting
the
more
entropy work. The entropy will increase.
Well, no, the entropy will not increase. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry, the entropy will increase. That's correct. So
at most, you can get 99.999999% of the energy back, right?
Well, I think at most it's a lot less than that.
Well, yeah, I'm just
remember the numbers, but yeah, you will not get all that energy. You're going to lose some of it to heat regardless, because the heat is less organized than, or less orderly than, mechanical work. That's why heat engines are by nature inefficient, and that's just when we burn fuel, and that's essentially what we have to do for any type of engine. We have to convert it, this stored energy, to thermal energy, and then the thermal energy is converted to mechanical work. So when somebody states, well, the second law of thermodynamics really has to do with energy availability in heat engines, well, that's absolutely correct. But the reason being is because mechanical work is more orderly than thermal energy. So it is both true that entropy is disorder and mechanical work, and the second law of thermodynamics states, or has to do with, I'm sorry, the availability of energy in a heat engine.
Okay.
What I want to do now is basically explain some things that would contradict the second law if they were to be true. Okay, so I'm explaining what does not contradict, I'm explaining why evolution does not contradict it, and a good way to kind of demonstrate how, you know, any scientific law is not contradicted is to explain what would contradict it. So let's go back to my original explanation of the two containers, sealed containers, with the tube in between. Let's say I open the valve, the gas goes from one container to another, so I have both sides, both containers have equal amounts of gas. Well, if just for no reason whatsoever, all of the gas spontaneously moved back to one container and added vacuum in the other without any type of pump moving it there, without any type of energy being expended to put it there, that would be a violation of the second law.
That would be a decrease in entropy,
yes,
in a closed system.
Yes, with exactly. Because no right. energy was used, or no increase in entropy happened elsewhere in the system. Let's say I poured a glass of water, left it, and came back in 5 minutes, and there was boiling water in half of it and ice in the other half of it. That would be a contradiction. Now, it would not contradict the first law of thermodynamics, because the first law of thermodynamics just states that the energy is conserved. So if all the energy spontaneously moved to one part of the glass, first law is fine, but the second law is violated because that's a decrease in entropy. And this last one came from the physics textbook. Let's say a stationary block sitting on the ground begins to spontaneously move by means of its internal thermal energy. Because any object has a certain amount of energy just by its temperature. So let's say the block started cooling down and moving, so its thermal energy was converted to mechanical energy spontaneously, and it started moving. As long as the temperature decreased by the number of joules required to decrease a certain amount of temperature, and it's the same amount of joules required to move that object from point A to point B, the first law is satisfied. You know, if all of a sudden you come home and your couch just shuffled itself over to the other side of the room and it's ice cold, the first law is satisfied, but the second law of thermodynamics is not, which is why we need more than one law of thermodynamics to describe how matter behaves when energy is involved.
Okay. So, to bring this back to evolution specifically, right?
Yes.
So, we see an ordered system in nature, right? An organism.
Yes. And...
okay.
I'm not entirely sure that seeing organisms evolve constitutes an increase in order the way it's described in thermodynamics, but we can say it does.
Okay, we'll say it does, for the sake of argument. That just means, all that means is, the energy it took to, the energy it took to create that order, it came from somewhere.
Yes.
Right? The natural processes that it happens, and it just didn't convert all the energy to the order.
Yes.
Right? That's all the second law says.
Yeah, that in order for that to be organized, and create this order by organizing whatever you're organizing, you had to create a large amount of disorder elsewhere inside the system. Right. And that disorder is created by burning fuel.
Which is like eating.
Yeah, yeah, that's the big thing. You know, you eat food, you burn calories...
You grow, you burn, yeah.
Increases disorder. Okay, so this last example I'm going to talk about, or describe, this actually came from Stephen Hawking's book that I mentioned earlier. Let's say I save information onto a hard drive. I've got open memory on my hard drive. I've got a file. I save it. Well, a hard drive is basically just a bunch of switches that exist in one state or one of two states, on or off, and by setting the switches, you can encode information. So when I save information onto my hard drive, I increase the order of that hard drive by putting useful information where there was none. But by doing that, it decreased the entropy of those switches by making them more organized. But in order to save information on the hard drive, I have to run the computer. And doing that uses electricity. Your computer heats up as you use it because energy is being converted, and it increases the entropy of our universe. So again, it's another basic example illustrating the same thing, but this one came from Stephen Hawking, so I felt...
yeah, that reminds me, I was listening, I think it was one of the latest Skeptics Guide to the Universe episodes. They were talking about, I'm pretty sure that was this, they were talking about a claim how, you know, because of the law of conservation of energy, right, when you die, all that information in your brain is stored energy and has to go somewhere, right?
What?
Yeah, that's what that was the claim. But from Skeptics Guide, what he made clear was that stored information, like in your brain, isn't energy. It's just the arrangement of your molecules, right? It's not energy.
Yeah.
It's just the order that it's in. So when you die, the order's still there. It's just you don't have you're not there to recall it anymore. So
yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I never... that sounds vaguely familiar. I think I've heard that before, and I kind of forgot about it. Otherwise, I would have mentioned it here. Because, yeah, that's an interesting...
right.
Thing. So, yeah, so therefore, for thermodynamics to be satisfied, that you have to... your soul has to live on or something.
Yeah, the claim was the law of thermodynamics means that the soul has to keep existing somewhere because you can't destroy it. You can't destroy that energy. But he made... the difference was between energy and information.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where.
But and by that logic, then your soul would have to exist. You know, your mental, I guess, well-being and the soul would have to be the same as if you is, you know, in the afterlife is how it was when you died. So if you died of Alzheimer's, then you are going to continue to be batshit crazy for eternity in heaven.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which is, you know, exactly what you'd expect from a loving God. Or if someone was so morbidly depressed that they committed suicide, well, they'd continue to be morbidly depressed forever.
Right.
In hell, because that's where they go, apparently, according to religious people.
Yeah. But anyway, that's, I'll just say, that's the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. That's one of the best podcasts in the world. If you're not listening to them, turn this off right now and go subscribe to them and then come back if you want to later. But
I actually don't listen to them very much. I think I have like once.
It's kind of long. It's like an hour and
20 minutes. I think that's why.
But, I mean, we run about that every all the time, so. That's not that I compare. They're way better than that.
Yes. It's a lot, you know, when you run long and you're good, then it's okay.
They have a really cool segment where the fake news stories, well, Steve will read four news stories.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And you have to determine which one's
real, which is the fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome. So, getting back to evolution, and we already kind of started to go into this a little bit, but we have increases of order on Earth, right? We see them all the time. Now, again, for an increase in order, all we have to have is an increase in disorder by a larger amount elsewhere. And as I hinted at before, all of the energy on Earth, pretty much, or most of the energy, the vast majority, comes from the sun. While the sun is pouring out energy, it is increasing entropy in the universe. So in order for any energy to even get to the Earth, entropy has to increase on the sun by converting stored energy into electromagnetic radiation, which then makes its way to the Earth, and we use it.
Yeah, burning the hydrogen.
Yeah, because all of our, you know, even the fossil fuels, they came from the sun, I'm pretty sure. I mean, they came from,
technically.
Yeah, no, if you trace it back far enough, I mean, they came from fossil fuels, from dinosaurs who died.
Yeah, dead organisms that,
you know, that converted into oil after a very long amount of time, but with that energy, trace it back further, those animals ate energy, you know, got energy from eating plants that came from the sun through photosynthesis. You trace it back, it comes from the sun. And in order for that energy to get there, entropy increased.
Well, also, probably geothermal too, right? Or because it's...
Yeah, you're right. That, absolutely, yeah.
And the pressure from being, you know, underground for so far down.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Yeah, you're correct, though.
Splitting hairs. But
then again, making use of this energy increases entropy. So we see entropy increasing all around us.
So entropy just relates to energy usage, not order. You can have an increase in order without violating the second law.
Yeah, exactly. Entropy basically states, and that's the thing, is whenever we use energy, we call it consuming energy, but it's not really consuming it, it's converting it. But whenever we consume, or do what we would consider to be consuming energy, we are converting it to a form that has more entropy. If I get up and walk around, I'm burning calories. That's increasing entropy. Anytime you do mechanical work, you are burning calories, you're burning fuel, you're increasing entropy. So I can do mechanical work to increase order, okay? I can organize something. I can, you know, shovel snow out of my driveway. That's going to create more order. It's going to decrease entropy, but in order to do that, I have to burn fuel and increase entropy elsewhere. And what the second law of thermodynamics states is that no matter what I do to increase or decrease order, decrease entropy in one part of the system, I will increase entropy by a larger amount elsewhere in the system.
Got it.
So that's about it. And yeah, it's a lot more useful when you talk about availability of energy in a heat engine than it is to talk about, you know, stupid shit like, oh, well, this proves that evolution didn't happen. But, again, people are going to use science however they want to.
Especially when they pick and choose which scientific laws they want to follow that day of the week.
Yes. So, that is argument number one. I hope I thoroughly debunked it. If you listen to this and you're still here, and you're thinking, I didn't get any of that, that's no problem. You can always go back to the premise of scientific laws cannot be violated and argue on that. Because in order to make the argument that evolution didn't happen because of violations of laws of physics, you have to hold the premise that you can't violate laws of physics. Even though you're not violating laws of physics by creating order.
Which means no poof, the universe into existence. Yes.
Okay, so argument number two for the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics states, I'll lay it out in numbers. Number one, the second law of thermodynamics states the entropy of the universe is always increasing. Number two, we have order in the universe. Number three, in order to have this order, entropy must have decreased at some point in time. Number four, therefore we have evidence that the entropy of the universe was decreased at some point in time. Number five, this violation of a scientific law can only happen by way of a deity. Number six, God exists. So in other words, okay, we see we have order here, and okay, even though we'll concede that disorder is constantly increasing, we do have order. Our universe is not completely disordered, so at some point in time, we had to get this order from somewhere. For that to happen, entropy had to decrease. The entropy of the entire universe had to decrease, therefore, that had to happen by way of a miracle. Where did this order come from, in other words? Kind of like Bill O'Reilly's, where did the planets come from?
Right.
Now.
So we already covered this, right? I mean, isn't it pretty much the same argument, though?
It's a different argument, because the first one goes on the premise that the second law of thermodynamics cannot be violated, has never been violated. Okay. Not possibly. This one argues that...
This one's saying that it has been violated.
Yeah, that we have evidence that it has been violated, and, you know, again, with the miracle thing, we're going to show that scientific laws are violated, therefore a miracle occurs. So, how did we get the order in the universe without a miracle? I will explain. And I'm going to do this by explaining something that Jake and I did last year that got us both into some big trouble. So, last year, at one point in time, Jake and I were sitting back, we're drinking some beers, I think we both got a little bit drunk, and we decided that we were paying too much for garbage pickup. So, we said, screw this, I'm not paying for garbage pickup, we're just going to start throwing our garbage in our front yards. So, we did that. We just started throwing garbage in our front yards until both of our front yards became completely full of garbage. Around this time, our wives started to kind of get together, and they both hated it. They both were getting really pissed off. So, they pulled us both aside and said, look, assholes, you're going to get out there, and you're going to start cleaning this garbage up. And we were both like, what the hell are you talking about? We don't want to pay for trash pickup. And they said, we don't care. You're picking up the goddamn garbage. So I think I started to argue something like, well, I can't pick all this stuff up today. And it went back and forth and back and forth. And you know, some pretty harsh words were said. But essentially, I think it came to the conclusion that both of our wives said, we're locking the front doors, and you guys are not coming into the house again until half of the trash out of the yard is picked up. So I went home, I grabbed a shovel, and I started shoveling trash from the driveway into the back of my truck, taking loads to the landfill, until finally I got half of the garbage off of my front yard. Now, I created more order in my front yard, right? I organized the trash. I got rid of some of it. I created order. There was more order in my front yard. I decreased entropy by creating the order, by cleaning up, but I also burned calories doing so. I burned fuel from driving back and forth to the dump truck. Second law is satisfied because I created more disorder by using, you know, doing work and consuming energy to organize my front yard. Jake, however, went about this a much smarter way. You remember this? Jake went to his next door neighbor and said, "Hey, buddy, how much do you want for me to buy your front yard from you?" Guy's like, "What?" Jake says, "I need to buy your front yard. It's a long story, but you know, if you appreciate, you know, if you if you'd wouldn't mind selling me your front yard. I'd like to buy it. And, of course, the neighbor's like, does this have anything to do with all that trash in your yard? And, you know, Jake says, yeah, I'm surprised anybody noticed, because Jake lives in Sunnyland, so having a bunch of trash in your front yard is something that people don't really notice. So, anyway, Jake buys his neighbor's front yard. His neighbor's front yard is now his front yard. Jake now has half of his yard trash-free.
Pretty ingenious, really.
Yeah, knocks on the door and says, okay, I'm ready to come in. You know, his wife looks out and says, bullshit, there's still trash on the front yard. He holds up a piece of paper. Nope, I just bought this property right here. Our front yard now consists of all this area. Half of it is free of trash. Now, Jake increased order in his front yard, but he did not decrease entropy. He increased order by increasing the size of his front yard. You see where I'm going with this? You can get order by increasing the size of the system.
Okay.
So, in other words, the amount of entropy you can have in a system is limited by the size of that system. I think, actually, the maximum amount of entropy that you could possibly have in a system is equal to the amount of entropy in a black hole of that size. So, therefore, simply by increasing the size of your system, right, there's more different places for objects' energy to be. There's more different, you know, ways for disorder to exist.
Okay.
So, where did the order of the universe come from? It came from expanding the universe. We live in an expanding universe. At one point in time, this universe was very small. Right around the time of the Big Bang, entropy would have been about as high as it possibly could be for such a small space. But as the universe expanded, we had order because there's more space. There's more ways for molecules to exist. Therefore, it's more orderly.
I get it.
This argument actually comes from Victor Stanger. He writes a book called God, the Failed Hypothesis.
Right.
I just finished reading. It's a very good book. He basically goes over, says, okay, we can't necessarily disprove any God exists, but we can disprove that the Judeo-Christian Islamic God exists, because that God, you know, the existence of that God makes scientific predictions.
Right.
And basically, this was kind of a side note when he went on to the whole disorder had to come from somewhere, it had to be God. Well, no, the order came from expanding the universe. In other words, you can increase order in a system by increasing the size of the system, and you get an increase in order without getting a decrease in entropy. So the entropy of the universe never decreased, but we had more order because we had an expanding universe. As the universe expands, the maximum possible amount of entropy in the universe increases. So at the early beginning of the universe, at the Big Bang, entropy would have been at its maximum possible, point. And then that possible amount of entropy decreased very quickly. It decreased quicker than entropy increased, which is why we have order today.
Okay. And by expand, you know, the system expands, that's just not in, you know, that's space and time, right? You see what I mean? Like, it got bigger in X, Y, Z, but also, you know, through time. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I have to admit, I get a little bit,
Right. It gets kind of fuzzy with me, too, but the way I'm understanding it, it got bigger, and, you know, the yard got bigger.
Yes.
But also, over time, the trash decomposed on its own.
Okay.
See what I mean?
Yes. Now, I'll go back to one more illustration, and then I'm done with this whole thing. Okay.
See, we're going a little over an hour now.
Really? Wow, we better finish it up then pretty quickly. Okay, so let's go back to my two containers of gas, right? I've got my two containers. All the gas is in one of them. There's a valve, vacuum in the other one. Valve is closed. Now, these containers actually, for this illustration, make a pretty decent model of a closed system. It's not really a closed system, but it kind of represents one for this argument.
Sure.
Now, with that valve closed, we can actually consider them two separate systems. at the instant I opened that valve, okay, the system became much more orderly. So let's say, actually, let's forget the empty valve, and let's look just at the valve with the gas, right? As a certain amount of volume, with those molecules bouncing around, they're uniformly distributed, they are at, it's at its maximum entropy, because air's everywhere. Now, the second I opened that valve, the instant, the system increased in size.
Right.
The system became more orderly, because now all of my gas is in half of the system. It's all pushed over to one side of it. It is now more orderly. I did not decrease entropy to get that order. I increased the size of the system. And then eventually, since the size does not continue to increase, entropy continues to increase, because it's always increasing. The gas flows from one container to another. It fills up the other container. Entropy increases until it reaches its next maximum allowable value. So that's a pretty good analogy, a pretty good model of increasing right. order, right? Because at that instant, we still have all of the gas in one half of the system. Because
you increase the size by increasing order. Get it.
So that explains why we have order in the universe without violating the second law of thermodynamics.
Awesome. I get it. That's really neat. I understand the second law of thermodynamics better now.
I hope so. And I hope I didn't, you know, and that's one thing is I'm good at understanding stuff, but I'm not so good at explaining it always.
No, I think you explained it great. My understanding is cemented now, I think, so that's great. And is science class over?
Yes. I think this stuff is cool. I love science.
No, I think it's great. It's kind of a change of pace for us.
Yeah. We're moving up in the world.
Talk about religious stuff that pisses us off, but I think this is kind of neat. I feel smart.
Awesome.
All right. So, do you want to move into some church
signs? Let's do some church signs. All right, we have to have church signs.
Okay. Here's one. I don't think I've done this before. I keep wanting to think I have, but I don't think I have. Heaven, no pain, all gain.
Really?
Yep.
No pain, all gain.
I've got a bridge to sell
you. You know what? You know what that makes me think of? I've heard this story a lot. You hear this a lot. I remember growing up in church. It's their call or their motivation to try to convert or evangelize to your friends. Okay, so let's say Christ comes back and we're all sitting here, we're all happy, and then, yeah, well, where's Billy? Oh, wait, Billy's not here. Billy is in hell because he didn't leave, right? So wouldn't that be somewhat painful? Then that's the other thing. Okay, so we talk about that, right? And you're going to in heaven, you'll be reunited with your loved ones. Well, what if all your loved ones aren't in heaven?
All right, what if you're the only one in your family, of all your friends and family, that accepted Jesus as your personal savior?
Yeah, would not that not be painful on some level? Yeah, you'd be in paradise, but you'd still... That's just a basic contradiction that I always like about heaven.
But you'd be in heaven, Nick. It wouldn't matter.
Yeah, I guess. You won't remember those asshole members of your family that didn't. They didn't convert. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Oh, let's see. I got another one here. Okay. Excuses discount our God-given abilities and responsibilities.
What?
Excuses discount our God-given abilities and responsibilities.
I'm still not getting what the hell that means.
Like, excuses, like, you know, I don't want to do that today, I'm tired, I have stuff to do.
Oh, okay.
Discount our God-given abilities and responsibilities. Basically saying, God made you good at, you know, shoveling snow, or God made you good at doing what you're doing. So if you don't do it because you're making excuses, you're just saying, hey, God, screw you, I'm better than you.
With great power comes great responsibility. You have an ability, you must use it for the good of mankind.
Pretty much, yeah.
And God gave that to you, so you're... You're saying,
that's
fuck
really,
you, God.
It's a really mild way of putting it, but yeah.
Whenever you decide to put off shoveling snow.
or, you know, God made you particularly good at math, so by not using it to being a mathematician or whatever.
Yeah.
discounting God's ability, which is just silly, I think, because I used to be good at math, but not anymore.
You know, we have certain skills that we use some and we don't use others, and I don't know.
Well, and that's what really bothers me about this, is it's the whole guilt trip thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when you, if you fail at something, it's because, you know, God didn't give you, you know, God didn't make you able to do it, you know what I mean? That's what's implied. I mean, obviously they're not saying that, but that's kind of where that thinking leads, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, but, meh, that's just...
I think half these church signs are guilting people into stuff. I've got one, actually.
Okay.
That I've been seeing recently.
You mean a church is trying to guilt someone into doing something?
I know,
really?
It's shocking. It goes something like this. I didn't write it down, so I don't know exactly. So I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it said, God called, wanted to know where you were. Really?
If you got someone in calling you saying it's God, you can call the police.
Yeah, no kidding. Or a therapist. But, yeah. But then I sit there and I ask myself the question, so, how much time do you think an omniscient being spends wondering about things? God's all-knowing, but doesn't know where the hell you are right now.
Yeah, really, doesn't that... So, there goes omniscience.
Which, again, was just trying to, you know, it's trying to guilt the half-in-half-out Christians that, eh, you know, I should really go to church, but I haven't been in, you know, 6 or 7 months, and, oh, shit, oh, yeah, that's right, God's probably wanting to know why I'm not going to church.
Shit, God was looking for me, uh-oh.
Oh, man.
I'm in trouble, I'm
I hope he's not mad. Like the old phrase, Jesus is coming, look busy. But yeah, that's the same stuff. It's, you know, it's trying to guilt people who are still believe, but, you know, don't want to be bored to tears every Sunday morning.
Oh, this just occurred to me. I was listening to Christian radio. I do that sometimes when I'm driving home. I just scan the radio stations and I just catch something that, you know, piques my interest in it. It was this guy talking about, like, okay, I guess Mary was anointing, or Mary Magdalene was anointing Jesus' feet with these really expensive oils, right?
Yeah.
And Judas is like, hey, what the hell are you doing? Why are you, you know, why didn't you take that money and spend it and give it to the poor? Right?
Yeah.
Which is a valid question, in my opinion.
Yep.
And the person on the radio said, well, you gotta wonder why Judas is asking this. Judas is a thief. Judas used to steal the money. Yada, yada, yada. Judas just wants to know so he can steal the money for himself. And I'm like, okay, that's well and good, but answer the fucking question.
Yeah.
Who cares why he's doing it? Why the hell are you having him anoint his feet when there's people that are starving?
Did they happen to mention where in the Bible that happens?
No. Actually, no. If they did, I don't remember.
I don't remember. I don't think... Okay, because here's the deal. The only book of the Bible that describes Judas as being a thief is the book of John. The only gospel account that describes Judas as being a thief is the book of John. The other ones don't. None of them. John is harsher on Judas than any other one. And that story of Mary Magdalene, I don't think that came in John.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
I don't know. I'm not much of my biblical scholarship here, but.
But yeah, it
seems right. John's the one that's different from all the other ones.
Yeah, that's
the other three, pretty much word for word.
The synoptic gospels, John is different, and you can also see there's the John. Yeah, he's really harsh to Judas more so than the rest. And yeah, there was something else to do with that too. I can't remember. We're listen to Reasonable Doubts if you want redaction criticism and really good critiques of the Bible. Listen to Reasonable Doubts with the guys to do it. But
or listen to Irreligiosity.
Yeah,
they do
it. They're good too.
They're the last one with their Evidence for Faith debate.
Yeah.
Remake.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
But. Yeah, and anyone who tries to harmonize the Bible will say, well, Judas was a thief in all of them, just John's the only one to mention it. And they'll try to say that true. But if you look at redaction criticism, there's different agendas. You know, all of them have Judas betraying Jesus. But some of them are more. John was the harsh one. He was the one that kind of badmouthed Judas outside of just betraying Jesus, but saying, well, he was a thief and he did this. And but yeah, so the gospel writer that was writing about Judas's. Also, there was two disciples named Judas. There were two Judases. Judas Isocrat, I think his last name, was the one that betrayed Jesus. There was another Judas there as well.
I didn't know that.
Yes. There's two guys, because there were two Simons, which is why one of them was known as Peter.
Yeah, I knew that.
And there was two Judases. And then there was, I think there was one other name that was repeated. I can't remember all the names of them anymore, but I am sure there are two Judases.
Okay, well.
Judas, I don't know how you, what the plural form of Judas is, but.
Judasai. Judasai or Judasai. Or maybe it's just Judas, like a herd of Judas. No, would it be a murder of Judas?
It'd be Judai, like cactus, cacti. Judas, okay. Judai.
What would you call a group? A flock? Or
a flock.
A flock. Or anyway. Okay, so that should that does it for this episode?
We did pretty well. We were almost finished up. It was kind of a long episode, but it was an episode full of information, and then we had to get sidetracked at the very end.
Oh,
we have to. We can't not get sidetracked. I think our loyal listeners are probably listening, you know, saying, when the hell's the side? It's been an hour. They haven't been sidetracked yet.
Right. Not really. So, okay, well, the website is agnosticpodcast.com.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook. We're not on MySpace anymore. I don't know if that group even exists. But nobody's on MySpace. I think
it's not called MySpace.
Yeah, anymore. It's like blank space or something. I don't know, yeah. Or space. But no one's ever been on there. We didn't get any feedback. We got very little on Facebook. We did get some on Facebook. Nothing on MySpace. I'm never on there anymore.
So. Yeah, we've got the group on Facebook.
Yes.
Just search Ignatius Brothers Podcast.
Yep.
And the email address is IgnatiusBrothersPodcast@gmail.com.
If you go to our website, our email address is there. There's a link to the Facebook group, as well as information about each of us personally.
I just remembered. Remember I was going to talk about that argument against gay marriage, the weird one that I heard?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mention that because I figured I'm not going to, and here's why. The argument wasn't an argument against gay marriage. It was an argument. The guy was just being a dick, saying, you know, you try to say, like, use logic and reason to devise this, and the guy will say something like, well, you can't prove your logic or reason exists.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Yeah. He's just being a dick, and and every time you can make a list of points, like, make one solid point, and the guy will respond, picking, wait, do you know what this word really means? Are you sure you're using this word and this word? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Just respond to the point. You know what I mean. You know, he's being obtuse on purpose, and there's no point in really going over what he was saying, because none of it was even made any sense. So
okay.
So I'm leaving it alone. So
sounds there good.
One more
sidetrack.
Right. And also one more thing. The Pure Humanist Society is meeting this week. I'm attending this next meeting.
Woohoo!
It's on Tuesday at 6 o'clock at One World. In Peoria, so it's on Main Street.
Any local listeners that come
there? I haven't been to a meeting in a long time, mostly because they hold them about half an hour, 45 minutes from my house.
Yeah,
and they hold them on the weekends, and my wife works weekends, and I'm usually either spending time with her or my kids because I don't have that much free time, so. But I'll be at this one, so...
I probably will not, because I'll be at work. I'm going to... If I'm not busy, I might be able to take a long lunch and go, but I probably won't be able to do that, so...
Right. I will be there representing the podcast.
Wonderful.
So... And I think we should be able to record another episode next weekend.
Yeah. I should have time to put some stuff together.
I mean...
We can talk about your transcendental argument, maybe.
I'll see what I can do with her. I'm not very good.
Or we can just make fun of people. Make fun of Bill O'Reilly some more.
Yeah, we didn't make fun of as much people this time as we usually do. So
yeah, we actually had material to present.
Right. I wouldn't mind making fun of some more people next time, but okay, so I guess that about does it for the episode. Again, the website is ignatiusbrothers.com. The email address is ignatiusbrothers@gmail.com. So, for the Ignatius Brothers Podcast, this is Jake.
This is Nick.
And remember to keep asking questions.
Children into fools!